We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
It's the SNL Hall of Fame Podcast with Chief Conversationalist Bill Kenny. Featuring Matt Cardill. And now, curator of the hall, your host, JD.
Hey, it's JD here, and live from the woodshed of the SNL Hall of Fame, it's the Don Pardo Award episode. I'm thrilled to be here with you. As I mentioned, in the woodshed. Not behind the woodshed, in the woodshed. The hallowed grounds of the SNL is being torn down. The only thing left is the plaque room. And even Matt's trivia corner has been, you know, torn. But enough about that, because we're going to have a good time tonight. We're going to have a great time, in fact. I'm joined by my two cohorts on the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. We've got Trivia Meister himself, Matt Cardill. How's it going, Matt?
Good, thanks. And yourself?
So far, so good. And we're joined by Chief Conversationalist Bill Kenny. Bill, how are you doing?
Yeah, you took my lazy boy, JD, so I don't know how I feel about that. But I'm good. I'm good otherwise. Coming off the high of the season finale of SNL 50 and excited to get into this. This is a fun one to talk about.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you if there's anyone you're going to stump for in particular on the SNL ballot going into the class of season 7. Mr. Kenny.
There's a lot, and I'll be on the round table in a couple of weeks talking about my full ballot, but I think the one I want the most is Lorraine Newman. She's somebody who, at the beginning of the show, even rewatching it in the 80s, as a teenager, she never got her due. She was kind of, talked about with Garrett as kind of afterthoughts. They're the only two people who didn't become stars. And, she's gotten her due more and more as we've moved, through time. And, I think, you know, the spot she had on SNL 50, probably the most prominent role we saw from an original cast member at SNL 50 was very, very good to see. And I think she deserves it very much so. She was a great character player. We know the roles that cast members fill more now, you know, 50 years into the game. So I think that people can appreciate her a little bit more. And she's still out there and doing fantastic work.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that she's been given the opportunity to talk as much as she has in more recent times. It really did feel like she was glossed over, but in more recent times, she's come out more at different events, and therefore we've got to hear her speak, you know, on red carpets and whatnot. And it's really wonderful. Like I'm with you. I hope she gets in. And remember, everybody, voting is now open, and Lorraine could be on your ballot, as could an infinite number of other people. Well, not infinite, but a heck of a lot of other people. I went from infinite to heck of a lot. And I will say that you should go and vote. Make sure you vote. You have till June 1st to do that, and we'll put the link in the show notes. Matt, how about you? Is there anyone you want to stump for?
Going to the same era for a similar reason, Garrett Morris. He has an indelible mark as an original cast member, but he gave the show a lot of experience and gravitas of the other not ready for primetime players. Didn't really bring to the table, given his history as a Juilliard-trained actor, director, writer. And I think he sort of showed an unflinching nerve when sort of facing off against some of the pressures. History wasn't always kind to him. I know Eddie was a little critical of him later on, but I think he really sort of created a place for people of color, for different voices to have on the show. And I think that needs to be recognized, that, in my opinion.
Hear, hear. Yeah, I'll take that. Bill, anything you want to add to that?
No, love it. He's definitely on my list as well. And I think probably Mount Rushmore of all-time SNL singers. But what he was able to do, they still play Winter Wonderland on Christmas specials to this day. He had such a fantastic voice. Was kind of the pseudo musical guest a couple of times too, the Walter Matthau episode and a couple other times. So, definitely got glossed over even more than Lorraine, because I think with his drug problems and, then putting him in a dress as opposed to anything else, as they got into later years, was really, not great. So, happy to see him get his due.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting. I'm curious how this unlimited ballot or unlimited vote on the ballot is going to turn out, whether people will leverage that or whether people will, are small hall people and they'll stick to the floor, which is five. You have to vote for at least five. No more of these one person ballots. That's baloney, man. That's baloney. This list this year, you can't see me, but I'm pointing at the screen. This year, this list is stacked. It is stacked. And what do all these people on this list have in common? Well, they've all been on the stage or part of production of an SNL episode. And therefore, they have been touched or shown on the screen or acknowledged by a very important but underknown aspect of the show, and that is directors. So we're going to get into a little discussion about directors in general, and then we will take a look at some key directors in the scheme of things, I suppose. We don't want to real skip over anybody, but we're going to. So there's that. That's what we're going to do. So I wonder if anybody has any insight on directors in general. Matt, anything that you have experienced or understand about the role?
Yeah, I've directed theater. Television is a different kettle of fish, but it's still the same basic role of you're the person who's calling all the shots. You have to help with the blocking and understanding, what the beats of the sketch are in a sketch comedy. You're helping manage the rewrites and technical direction. And in case of SNL, you're calling which cameras to cut to and which cameras to use in combination with the crew in the booth. And just really, it's about ensuring the performance comes together as a seamless whole, which is a lot harder when it's a live performance compared to like a sitcom or something. So it's a really big sort of set of skills that you have to have and
right.
Be able to improvise almost as much as or if not more so than the performers who are performing in front of you. Things go sideways.
Yeah, you're right. They do have to have, a certain mettle in that regard. We often think of the cast as the improvisers. But you're right. There is something to that. And I just want to share a quick anecdote about the cast improvising during the show. I remember when we were doing a writing course in the performance school that I went to, and one of the instructors had directing background, and he was very much like, he set a lot of students in the class straight that were thinking that the show had become much more improvisational because they were getting so many growlings at the time. And, you know, he smartened them up right away and said, no. Like they simply can't, improvise as much as they would like, because the director would absolutely berate them after the show because they've got everything all figured out technically. And I wonder, Bill, like, although they have this technical side of things, when we think of directors, we do think of the creative side of things as well. And Matt touched on it, you know, being part of the rewrites and things like that. But I'm wondering if you can see sort of the style of the different directors that we've had in the SNL oeuvre.
I think so. You know, it's really interesting to see. You know, building on what Matt said about the live aspect, you know, when you think of other live shows like the Oscars and the Emmys, that's a hard job as well.
Yeah.
But those things are plotted out over the course of, you know, at least a couple of weeks. Very few changes as they get into things. You know, the director of SNL has to work on the fly from 10 p.m. on Saturday night to 11:30. So there's changes all over the place. They're cutting lines. They're doing, you know, and this goes to all the behind the scenes people, the cue cards and all of that. And the fact that they had plotted out blocking and camera angles and things like that earlier in the week on a Friday or early Saturday, and all of that's thrown out the window because two lines are cut because, you know, they have to change something. And even during the live show, if a sketch goes long, and they're moving things around, or they have to cut a sketch short. I think it's probably the most underrated position in SNL for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's tough to pin down what makes a director hall worthy. And I think that's where we sort of chickened out and didn't nominate one particular director or several over the course of the year, but rather we put them all in a basket lovingly with tender care, and we gave them the prestigious Don Pardo Award. Is there anything else that either of you would like to wrap up this discussion about directors with? Bill, go ahead.
I think the main thing is, it is the thing that will jar you most out of the show if it goes wrong. So that's why it's super important to talk about. Because, you know, if the writing is bad, you're like, oh, this sketch sucks, whatever, move on to the next one. If that camera is on the wrong person going into any part of it, you're taken immediately out of what's ever happening, the funny, the poignant, whatever's happening. And that's really super important, because I think there were times in the history of the show where you did see that happen quite a bit. And it really, really can almost ruin the episode for you. So, you know, it's one of those unspoken things that it needs to be addressed.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Bill. And while Matt's speaking, maybe you can just think about any particular specifics, episode-wise or sketch-wise in particular, that attributes this. And Matt, you can dabble that into your response as well.
Yeah.
But
well,
go ahead,
actually, that's where I was going to go. So, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, they have to be able to roll with it. Like, of course, like, as you mentioned, JD, they try not to improvise. But there's always circumstances that arise from a costume not being able to do a proper quick change, or like a, you know, the infamous costume department getting stuck and the show going to air. Like the directors are a big part of rolling with that. I mean, you have like Will Ferrell going off script for Harry Carey or the stinky meat basket for the Smoky Farm sketches. That though, in those cases, you know, like in the Harry Carey interview where he's interviewing Jeff Goldblum, when he's interviewing Jeff Goldblum, Goldblum's like, what's going on here? He's like looking off the cue cards going, what's happening? But the director's got to be on top of that too. And, you know, so they have to know, okay, well, cut, because this is the moment and they're on the fly. And, you know, they have to be able to roll with the punches and be prepared for when things do go sideways or off script or a line gets flubbed. And I think that is what makes this so unique from even other live television, like Bill was saying, like the Emmys or something like that. It's a completely different kind of ball game, and you need a next level director to be able to handle that.
Well said. Yeah, I don't think there's any particular sketch. I mean, I think often of early Update where, you know, Chevy, and this could be on the actor as well as the director, but, you know, the turn to camera two as they're about to, when they used to have the big TV for the green screen, as opposed to the bug over their shoulder. So I think that is one of those things that sticks out to me, because that can ruin a joke. I mean, there were plenty of jokes that Chevy told that, because he's, you know, batting his head around, you're kind of taken out of it. And that kind of goes towards that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think one in particular where I think a director did really well is, it's coming to my brain right now, it's the Massive Head Wound Harry. You know, I doubt that they meant to initially, you know, my thinking is that initially they were trying to pull away. They didn't want to see the dog pulling on it. And then at some point it just became, you know, so outrageously hilarious in the actual studio that it was like, well, we'll hold on it for a little bit here and give the home audience some of this as well, because this is great. And the sketch was enhanced as a result, you know? So that's a right to your point as well, Matt. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating. Now, there's been 5 directors in total. Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, there's been 5 directors in total.
Yes.
But we're going to speak on 3 today that probably made the most significant contribution to the show as a whole. The jury is out for our current director,
Liz Patrick.
Liz Patrick, thank you so much. Yeah, so we'll see, because she's early in her tenure, I suppose. And these 3 that we're talking about all have a resume a mile long, and it's fascinating. So we're going to take a deeper dive into them. And we're going to break it down this way. We're going to talk about Davey Wilson first, who was on the show the initial season up through 86, and again from 89 to 95, which is really cool that he got to cover, you know, 2 golden ages. Then we'll talk about Beth McCarthy Miller, who was there from 95 to 2006, a unique voice as well. And then I'll speak on Don Roy King, who is the second most tenured, I suppose, director. And we'll learn a little bit more about him. So who has got Davey Wilson?
I do.
All right. Kick it off, Bill.
Yeah. So Davey comes into the show, as you said, right at the beginning, and almost doesn't get the job because, you know, he's kind of a buttoned up guy. Comes in the suit and tie for the interview, and there's Lauren sitting in his t-shirt, and I think it was a Dracula Sucks t-shirt and a pair of jeans, which is hilarious to think about Lauren at any point in his life. You think that Lauren came out in a suit out of the womb, but you know, he goes in and it doesn't really feel like it's going well to Davey, but then it comes up that George Carlin is going to host the first show. And he says that, well, you know, I went to camp with them, which he did, but he didn't think George would remember him. And it actually works out that George does remember him, and he's given the job partially based on that. So yeah, he's there for the beginning, and he really kind of revolutionizes everything that's going on with directing at this point. If you watch variety shows from this era, you know, Sonny and Cher or anything along that lines, it's very staid. You know, that's obviously not live, but it's filmed live. And, you know, it's usually one camera, you know, one kind of thing going on. He's playing off multiple stages. He's taking kind of big chances with, you know, putting the camera behind the host, showing the audience, things of that nature. And he also becomes part of the story of the original era, right? Because something they don't do now, really, other than Lorne occasionally, is all the behind-the-scenes people, the backstage crew, were part of the cast in different various forms. Davey appears in the 9th episode of the show. The Killer Bees with Elliot Gould, and they play him as a drunk, which he was not. but, you know, the camera starts drifting during the Killer Bees, and it's the first time we see Lorne on camera as well. They go to the control room and they find Davey kind of passed out over the control. It's really another layer to the show that we don't get these days. And the other one that I really think about was he's there for the Jesse Jackson in 84. And Jesse's wondering why there's, you know, so little diversity. He goes into the control booth and Davey pulls all the white people out, brings all these black people into the booth to make it look like it's a very diverse show and to satiate Jesse. And he's a big part of that as well. So these are just a couple of points with him, but he works with all three producers, the only one to do that, which he had to, you know, after Lorne left, he really had to kind of take the reins because Gene Dominion was such a mess. He was helping her figure out, you know, how to do the show besides doing his own job. And by the time Ebersol gets there, he's helping Ebersol pick sketches, not based on what's funny, but what's easiest to direct, because he's pretty much at the end of his rope by the time this rolls around. But obviously, as you said, he comes back during the second golden era and has kind of a renaissance with that second golden era, and is there. It gets mentioned in the Goodnights in his final episode.
I didn't realize that he got recognized in the Good Nights on his last episode. That's a pretty big deal.
Yep.
Pretty big deal. Yeah. Instrumental, key player, you could say. Belongs in the Hall of Fame for sure. Matt, do you want to take us through Beth McCarthy Miller?
Yeah. Beth interned at MTV and CNN before joining the SNL team. She is actually the person who directed Nirvana Unplugged. So she has like a legacy beyond SNL, which she directed for 11 years, leaving in season 31 in 2006. Even one of the things that blew my mind while she was directing SNL, she was also directing the MTV Music Awards and the Super Bowl halftime show at the same time, juggling. So I'm like, that's amazing.
What?
So she really knows live television and the chaos that ensues. One of the things coming back to SNL when after 9/11, she had directed the America Tribute to Heroes, and then from that came back to direct the post SNL 9/11 episode. So she was there. She talks about during that time how she had a panic attack during dress, trying to get all of these people. And I think this speaks to the stress that directors are under, especially directors in New York that time, working on creatives at that time. She's like got all these people, and she's like all these people who've lost people, these firemen and police officers and first responders and construction workers. That she's getting up there on stage, she just was like, I gotta go for, just give me a minute, went, cried for 5 minutes, washed up her face, and just went back out there. Because she's like, if they can go and save people and pull people out of rubble, the least I can do is get my crap together and film this tribute for them. So, and she went on to direct the SNL 50 homecoming concert. So we have her to thank for that. So she's remained involved and has done a bunch of SNL adjacent projects like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and 30 Rock, doing things all the way to like Lip Sync Battle and Modern Family. So she's got an array of skills. I think she was there for some of the most iconic, in my mind, some of the most iconic sketches, like the Jeopardy sketches, Mary Catherine Gallagher. But I was watching an interview with her where she talked about one of her favorite moments. It was a sketch that probably most people won't remember, riding my donkey political talk show. And it's one of those sketches that went off the rails, like you said, like the massive head wound Harry. Because at one point, one of the donkeys just kept lowering its head. So Tim Meadows was falling off the donkey. And then another donkey just decided it wanted to eat Daryl's balls. So it was just like chewing on his crotch. And they were just like, okay, we got to cut to this. We can't not use this. And that's the thing that I find most impressive is she's able to keep the chaos productive, because live television, even the most tightly scripted, well-run things are going to happen, especially when you've got donkeys involved. she's also very thoughtful, like John Goodman, that sketch had like a very catchy tune at the beginning of it. It was originally pitched for a John Goodman episode, and it had to get cut. But every time he showed up to host after that, the first sketch and dress, she would play that intro for him because he loved that sketch so much at the table read. So, she remembers every sketch, every cast member, every host from who was on that night. She's just, they're an integral part, and she was an integral part of the show in a way that I don't think many people can say. Even Lorne possibly is he's involved intrinsically, but maybe doesn't have as much of a nitty gritty knowledge that these directors have.
Whoa, hot take. I love it. I love it. I love the spice. Really cool, to think that these people help not only shape the show, but then, take it over and put their own stamp on it. And that leads me to Dunroy King, who was fortunate enough at 59 years old to land the gig of director at SNL. Taking over for Beth McCarthy Miller. And if you look at the cast in season 32, and Kristen Wiig gets moved from rep player to full cast member about halfway through the season. And, there's just this great stuff happening with Andy Samberg and The Lonely Island. And then this veteran comes in, like I said, at 59 years old, and directs over 300 episodes at SNL. He stays there that long. He got his career started on local television in Pittsburgh, worked his way up to become a national director. I don't have specifics. I apologize. When people think of Dunroy King, whether it's him or not, or the Lonely Island influence, they tend to think of a more cinematic looking SNL. He was known for a steady hand on the rudder. Again, that's probably because of his veteran presence. And from the sounds of things, that's something that all three of these directors had in common. They brought a lot to the table. They brought a lot to the table and got to share that. So, I will say that, Dunroy King, in terms of awards and recognitions, was was the recipient of 11 Emmy Awards for Outstanding Director for a variety series, and he received 5 Directors Guild of America awards as well. So pretty cool. And then if you think of some of his standout episodes, you've got Eddie Murphy, like off the top of my head, Eddie Murphy's Comeback was him. The Betty White episode was him. Sorry, I'm going to mute for a second. I don't know if you can hear the dogs or not, but the dogs, could you hear them before?
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay. Well, the illusion's off. We're not in the shed. Oh my God.
They're playing in the yard outside the shed.
I lost my train of thought, but, I was naming a couple notable episodes that he directed, and there's a lot more you could name because he was a part of the third golden era. He's intrinsically linked with that group of performers. You know, somebody who is more directorial thinking than I am might say he helped bring out the best in their performances, because again, that's what most people see every week. You know, only a fortunate 250 or so people get to see it in the theater every week. So this is a big deal. These people are a big deal, and they deserve a spot in the SNL Hall of Fame, and we're glad to induct them today as recipients of the Season 7 Don Pardo Award. Fellas, anything you want to wrap up with tonight?
I'm just really glad that, you know, we have the Don Pardo Awards, because it gives an opportunity to recognize these people that aren't immediately top of mind for a lot of people watching or listening to the podcast or what the show. I'm thanks for doing that, and thanks for having me on. It's great to chat.
Excellent. Matt, thank you for being here. It's great. Always great to hang out. Bill, how about you, my friend?
Yeah, much of the same. I think it's really, really important to touch on people like this who are not going to get voted in, because not enough people think about all of the things that happen behind the scenes. And we've seen that with the writers, unfortunately, as well, in most cases. Yeah. So let's hopefully fix that this year. And tune in for the roundtable next week and make sure you vote. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Make sure you vote. You can go to bit.ly/SNLHOFS7. That's SNLHOFS7. And we're going to bid you adieu at this point. But if you would do me a favor and walk inside the wreckage, past the weekend update exhibit, and turn out the lights, but be careful, there's exposed wires, because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Doug Denant saying, see you next week.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.